Help build your future. Royal's home equity rates are at a historical low. And for a limited time, Royal Banks is offering one of the area's best home equity lines of credit. Call 314-212-1500 to talk to a representative today. Royal Banks of Missouri, investing in St. Louis for over 50 years. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, St. Louis, what have you been doing for the last 40 years? Eddie McVay here, and I know what we've been doing. Maggie O'Brien's has been proudly serving St. Louis and its visitors since 1979. As one of the only St. Louis family-owned and operated restaurants in downtown, we want to thank all of you for the support over the last 40 years with food and drink specials all year long, like $7 lunch specials, $6 pitchers of Budweiser, and $4 Jamesons, as well as awesome giveaways each month. Follow us on social media, visit our website, MaggieO'Brien's.com, or stop in at one of our two locations, downtown and in Sunset Hills. Don't miss your chance for concert tickets, blues tickets, cards, home opener tickets, and many more awesome prizes. Thank you for the support, and cheers to 40 years. And remember, Maggie O'Brien's at Market and 20th Street, Union Station is next to us.
The kids might have the back-to-school blues, but deliciously marinated tenderloins, loin fillets, and chops from Hatfield are just what you need to put a smile on their faces. Stop by your local Schnucks before that first bell rings and visit simplyhatfield.com to make easy more interesting.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law, who is right, who is wrong, who is for and who's against the law?
Well, that's right. See, that's really a rare recording of me singing with Johnny Cash. I remember when Johnny called me and answered the phone. I said, hello. He says, hello, this is Johnny Cash. I said, hello, John. He said, would you harmonize with me on a song I'm doing about the law? I said, sure. And it never took off. So the rare recording. Hope you enjoyed it. Scott Sherman is in the house. Here's how this works. First of all, now my screen. The screen was on. Now it is. Now, some smart person has already called and is on hold for Scott. Do not let this happen, folks. Don't let the following scenario take place where people are waiting to call for whatever reason, and then there are no callers, and we end the segment, and then never fails. It just lights up with everybody who meant to get in, and, oh, I should have called earlier. Don't do that. Call now. And as always, when someone finishes and Scott has helped them, that means that line is open. So you dial 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Please welcome Scott Sherman.
Thank you, Frank.
Before we begin, we have to tell people what you were telling me off the air. Folks, this is, you're not going to believe this. Scott Sherman, if you'd see Scott Sherman, if you've never seen him, you'd never think in a million years that he did what I'm about to tell you.
Yeah, it looked terrible.
He used to do, and he says he could do again if he'd lose a little weight.
Yep.
He jumped rope, and I don't mean, you know, one, two, three, and then, oh, your foot hits it and you're done. I mean, like you've seen those boxers cross their arms back and forth and jump forward, jump back.
Like Rocky.
Yeah, Rocky,
like Rocky
does it, yeah.
Scott Sherman did that and says could still do it. Tell them how many jumps. Now, folks, clearing the rope. One, two, three, four. I'd be done. I'd hit my foot. Tell them how many you were capable of jumping. How many jumps? Rapid fire.
When I was in my early 20s, I did it a lot. And I loved it because it was the best exercise I thought for sports.
Oh, it'll wear you out.
You could do a good pace without going, but just do about 100 a minute. And I got up to doing, you know, 10 minutes, 15, 20. I could do about a half an hour.
That's 3,000.
Yeah.
Clearing the rope.
Repetitions.
Without messing up 3,000 times.
And you can speed it up a little bit. You can slow down. And you move your when you're on your balls of your feet.
When then you're on your balls?
Of Ooh. Your feet.
Oh, of your feet. Okay.
Well, I want to make
you're
it
on your balls.
Dirt.
You did something wrong.
Of your feet.
You did, that's called the splits.
That's one ever.
Yeah.
So you can go back to your heel. You can go to the side of your foot. So you can make kind of like a little dance out of it. And if you move it, you know, you can cross arms. And
no,
then
no,
you can double up.
Cross arms. I could never do that.
I think people could do this. And I'd say the longest I've gone without missing in one session was about 40 minutes.
So that's about 4,000
times. Yeah, and I was about 21, 22. And then I kept doing it, not that much, but I made doing 10 minutes or 15 minutes sort of a daily regimen.
I've only tried a couple.
I'll bring a picture of me when I was 33 years old. So I wasn't like, 20. And I was in pretty good shape. And at a time, about 2005, this was a little later, I joined a gym. This boxing gym was out in O'Fallon. It had just started. And I liked the place because you could, box, and part of it was jump rope. And I liked doing the jump rope. But they just did a few jump ropes. At the end of a couple of the sessions, I started doing the jump rope with ankle weights on, which is not good for you, but, like 2-pound ankle weights or whatever, 5 pounds. And I did 1,000 jump ropes at the end of the boxing training in front of the class without stopping with the ankle weights on.
Wow.
And that, to me, I felt like I could jump through the ceiling. Of course, I'm only 5'8".
The only couple of times that I've tried it, taking a rope and actually just put it in my hands and started up, I'm not kidding. When I managed to do like 20 without tripping on the, after doing that 3 or 4, I was exhausted. That is incredible exercise.
It is. And the best part for me is I hate going places. So for people that run, great for you, or go around the track, that's okay. The best part about jump rope is you're at home.
Right.
You're already there. So whenever you're done,
you're home.
If you're tired or you maybe twist something wrong or you go a little extra, you don't have to call anybody to come get you.
And by the
way, you don't have to figure out any kind of geography.
And the equipment you need is very reasonable. It's a rope
and good shoes, and make sure your shoes are tied.
Wow.
And just go slow. And then we started about a week, my girlfriend and I started walking about a week and a half ago again, because I need to. Mm. And I started jumping rope at night. I'm up to 100 in a row.
Ooh, if anybody saw you and they said, here, okay, true or false, this guy can jump rope, they go, false.
Right.
I'm sorry, but I would never
picture you jumping rope. When I get up to 1,000 in a row, I'll, video it.
Okay.
And then we'll bring it in, because I think it's going to take
me. We'll put
it
on our Facebook.
We'll
put it on the show Facebook page.
I want to wait until, the end of September to do it nice and slow, but I think I could do 1,000 in a row by the end of September.
If we're on the air, if we're still on the air, I'm serious. Well, then, I would love to put it on our show Facebook page. I think that'd be something fun.
And it's a good challenge for me. Like, Tim's got a challenge. I know. I need a good challenge.
Hey, I think if I jump rope 200 times, I'd start a grease fire.
Well, first of all, you and I could never jump 200 or probably 20.
And you don't even need a rope, really, because it doesn't matter what the rope's doing, because it's not really a...
He doesn't laugh at my jokes anymore.
An arm thing?
I do it just
you
to
can
hurt
just
you.
Hop.
Hold on, Scott.
Yeah.
I deliberately, I'm laughing inside.
Okay.
I deliberately don't laugh on the outside because I know it bothers you.
It does.
That's all. But we're here to hurt each other. Right. And we're here
I thought you couldn't get your feelings hurt, Tim. I heard that one.
Well, oh, sure Frank
can.
Broke through.
Sure can. No, he said he could.
I broke the wall.
I said, yes, he can, and yes,
now,
he will.
Now, these people on hold are going, shut up about jumping rope.
Oh, yes, sir.
We need help. Folks, one line open. I don't understand this. How could one line still be open? Somebody smart who wants free legal advice will jump on this opportunity. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Let's bring Tom in here. Tom, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to attorney at law, Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Tom.
Before we get going, Scott, I'd like to thank Limey for not leaving.
You know what? I second that. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
We're so glad he did it.
I agree.
And the reason I know that's because I am AM and the PM.
Well, we can tell. So what's your issue?
Okay, Scott, without saying what kind of work I do, you can probably put two and two together. But I don't want to mention my employer's
name.
That
means you're an accountant. You're an accountant because you said put two and two together. I figured it out. He's an accountant.
Just like Steve Stenger. He was a lawyer and an accountant. You're just like him.
Not exactly. Right in that category. Yeah.
I was going to say jump rope salesman.
So what do you got?
Let's say I was on duty.
Okay.
And I was delivering something on a third floor of a place. And on my way out, I stepped on a sweet gum ball off a sweet gum, and I don't know what they're good for, to be honest with you.
Thank you. I couldn't agree more. My mother-in-law has these stinking things all over her yard, and I don't know why they exist.
I'll tell you why.
It's to have fights at bus stops with school kids. They are great missiles for fights at bus stops.
Okay, well, now we know. Go ahead, Tom.
So that's good. I slipped on one, and before I caught myself in the side of my car, and my hip popped.
Ooh.
And I thought I threw my hip out of place. Ooh. So I said, well, you know, I'm not going out anymore today. I'm going to go on home and put some ice on this. So I get home. Honey, my wife, would you put some ice pack together? And I'm going to go on the deck and sit for a little bit. Well, about 20 minutes later, I get up from the deck. I put my left leg down, and I had nothing at all on my right leg, and I went down 5 flights of stairs.
Oh, 5?
That's like slump rock.
Yeah, and I broke my hip in 2 places in my femur. Now, that happened at home. Now I'm fighting with work comp. Because they say, what happened at home? But no, the original thing happened while I was on duty, while I was at work. And
Here's my question. Between the time it happened to you when you were on the clock and working, how long after that did the thing happen at home? Same evening? Same day?
So, same evening, I'm going to say it took me 20 minutes to get home, and I was on the deck for a half hour with a nice pack.
I'm not an attorney. Obviously, Scott is, but here's what I'm going to say to you. Absolutely, that it is the result, and what happened to you is a result of what happened while you were on the job. Here's Scott.
Well, I think, Tom, the question that you're going to have to fight is the word idiopathic, and that means, essentially, something just happened. So, the cause of this sounds like what Frank said, the beginning of it. You're on the job, you're doing something, and because it's something that happened during work, it's work-related injury. You could have fractured your hip or put your hip out of joint then, and only later, when you actually got up, did the head of that femur snap, which is pretty much what happened. So, did the work-related injury while you were delivering whatever you were delivering on the third floor while you were at work, did that break there, or did it start there? It sounds like it did. And
it started there as it popped. When I started to fall, I caught myself on the car, but my hip popped.
I heard it pop.
And I assumed I just threw my hip out of place.
Right. The way you
fight
that,
I would be okay the next day.
The way you fight that, Tom, is with an expert. An expert would examine you, listen to your story, and if you have a work comp attorney, I don't know if you do or not, but they would hire somebody who would examine you and not just say whatever, but would evaluate your side of things. They don't work for the work comp insurance company, so they're more in your corner. And then both sides would present their medical evidence to this administrative law judge or ALJ, the people that decide these work comp cases, unless you could work it out. I think it's definitely worth a fight because it started while you were on work.
Tom, how long ago did this happen?
Well, it's been over a year now.
Turned it in. You've reported it, right?
I turned it in the very next day because I was laying on my patio.
Okay,
and I had to have my kids come over to take me inside the house.
Okay, good. The timeline is important because if you didn't say anything about it until a year later, that's a different deal. Yeah. And here's the other thing.
No. I reported it right away.
Did they file a claim? I mean, there's two things. There's a report of a work comp claim. That's something that Tom did right away. You have to fill out a report document. And then there's the filing of the claim. Do you get stuff in the mail periodically from the workers' comp division that says that it's on a docket or something? That
I do have an attorney.
Has been filed. I would say the conversation with your attorney is, what about what's called an IME, independent medical exam? Some people say there's nothing I about these medical exams, that they're very not independent. But the medical evidence, the medical expertise of your either treating doctor, which is paid for by the comp people, or your own doctor if you've gone that route, that medical opinion is going to be very important to countervail the argument that, no, it happened at home. So you know what they're going to say, no, it happened at home. They're going to pay somebody, and they're probably going to say, no, it happened at home. And then you're going to have an expert, and hopefully they'll say, no, it happened at work.
My money is on Tom, because it happened at home because of what happened before. And by the way, when things happen to you, you don't initially know it was anything more than you threw your hip out. You don't know there was something.
Frank, I had a client one time that slipped, and I'm not even going to say the substance because it was disgusting, but it was pretty gross, at a store and fell down. And she was so embarrassed that she fell down that she got up and hobbled her way back home. She had snapped her femur, which the head of that that goes into the hip joint there. She had broken it right there and then, but didn't go to the hospital. She could have died, and she went to the hospital a couple hours later. So it's not unusual
for it not to show up till later. And Tom, here's the other thing. In my life, I've had one back surgery, and it was because of a severely herniated disc. When it happened to me, I didn't have a clue until a week later. And a week after it happened, I couldn't get out of bed. I had to be carried to the doctor. So I think my money's on you. I think you got this.
Well, it sounds like they've got it under control.
Let me ask you this. If by some reason they deny me the claim, can I rebuttal that?
Well, you're in the... At what point? I mean, there's two layers here. Layer one, insurance adjuster, work comp insurance. That person is not a judge. They're not even a lawyer. They either negotiate the disability amount and whether they're going to pay the bills or not. The next layer is this ALJ, the administrative law judge or the work comp judge. That person really is going to be the decider. This is not something that a jury is going to hear. It's not even something, I wouldn't say real judge, but not like a robe judge. This is somebody that's down in the downtown. If this is a Missouri thing, it's in the Wainwright building. And these people's jobs are to look at these cases. And they don't go into bend over backwards, but they do bend in favor of the injured worker for coverage. If that doesn't work, if you have a hearing or a trial and you lose there, then you have to go to the Court of Appeals, and that's a pretty tough sell. So three layers. Layer one, insurance adjuster for the work comp carrier, your employer's work comp insurance. Two, administrative law judge, not a robe, but a judge. Step three, if necessary, appellate court. So you're kind of, are you what they call MMI? Have you been released back to work? Are you done treating?
Yes, but it was over a year, and I had to retire because I couldn't go up and down any flights of stairs anymore, and I was never going to retire.
Have you ever had your deposition taken on this, Tom?
Yes.
Okay.
With my lawyer, attorney,
and the other person, and you. But you haven't had a trial in front of one of these judges yet.
No, sir.
All right. You're in. Sounds like your attorney's got it going in the right direction. Not the easiest case in the world, but you got the next layer. You know, either negotiate with the other side or go to the administrative law judge and have a trial. We'll see. It sounds like it's going in the right direction. I have a difficult time talking about the work of other lawyers, especially while it's going on, but sounds like you got good confidence in your lawyer. Sounds like all the right things are being done. If you have any questions, call your lawyer and say, look, can I come to your office and we'll just talk about where the case is going? And he or she should.
They just sent me a letter. I'm going to their doctor now.
Get
a response from their doctor.
That's the other side of this IME, independent medical exam. Your doctor evaluates you, writes a report. Their doctor writes a report. One doctor says it's the worst thing they've ever seen. The other one says not only is it no big deal, it didn't happen at work. And then they figure it out later. So sounds like everything's under control.
Well, thanks.
Patience.
Okay. And Frank?
Yes, sir.
One more thing.
Yes.
People are idiots for not calling in early because I've been trying to get a hold of you and Scott for a month.
Well,
but I called in too late.
You were smart today because you called before top of the hour, I believe. Tom, thank you.
I did.
And thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Okay. Good luck.
Thanks, Frank. Okay.
Bye-bye. Sheila has been holding for 16 minutes and 23 seconds. We appreciate your patience. Sheila, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Hi, Scott. How's it going this week?
Great, Sheila. How are you doing?
Good, good. First of all, let me tell you thanks, because this situation is kind of sad. A young lady just buried her mother 10 months ago, and last Sunday her father passed away.
Ooh.
So...
How young?
30.
Okay. So, well, parents were what, young. Like in their 50s or something? Both of them?
I think they're in their 60s.
Okay. Still too young.
And so, you know, I don't know whether there's any legal paperwork, but my question is, where do you begin to sort these things out? Because I'm sure there's going to be property, real estate, and bank accounts. And, you know, if you were going to talk to this young lady or she came to you, where would you tell her to begin if there is paperwork and if there isn't legal paperwork?
I have a quick question, Sheila. How far apart did the parents die?
10 months.
When the first parent died, was it the dad who went first?
No, the mom.
Okay, when she went, did her dad indicate that his wife had had a will of any kind, or?
I don't know, and I think he could have been sick too, so not sure there was time to prepare any paperwork if he was sick.
Okay, the first thing I would do if I were her is, and this is not the answer to your question, but it's still important, is watch every single piece of mail that comes to that house. Because anything they had in the way of, if they had some stock, if they had the benefit, those things would come, a monthly statement or quarterly statement would come. So I would pay attention to every piece of mail, because it gives a pretty good picture of what her parents had in the way of insurance or whatever. As far as the other... Man, this is a very good question, because I think there are a lot of people that if both parents went, they wouldn't have a clue. They don't have a lawyer's name. They didn't know if there ever was a lawyer. So my answer would be I would turn that house inside, every drawer, every cabinet, and to see if there's any evidence, if there's a safe, get in it, if there's any evidence of a will. Scott, what do you think?
They go down to the county courthouse if there was anything on file?
All of these things are good. Let me walk through what I would say to this person if she asked me what you just said. I would say, first of all, obviously, how sorry we are. But is there something in the house that shows the title to the house or houses? If not, the county courthouse, the recorder of deeds office would be very good for that. Are there vehicles involved? Were there car titles that may have transferable on death designations in case when somebody passes away, the title would transfer to somebody else without it going to probate? So things like houses, the deeds will have a lot of times for married couples, joint tenant with right of survivorship. But then 10 months later, the surviving spouse passes away. Did they even have the wherewithal or the forethought to do a new designation?
So my guess is no.
No. It happens a lot with people who die in car accidents or plane crashes or like this, 10 months out of the blue. If is there a will, like Frank said? Are there documents? Are there insurance?
What about her question? Does a will have to be filed with somebody in a courthouse?
No, it doesn't get filed until it is probated. So the will is a private document that stays with the lawyer that drafted its office, or it can stay with them.
How about this?
I have a question on that, because when I did my legal documents, I got charged a $27.50 fee for something, and they said it was on file at the courthouse, I thought.
All right, this is a good reason to go back and look at every check stub or statement or bank statements, because maybe somewhere in there it'll be, they wrote a check for $1,500 to this law firm. That's probably for a will.
Yeah, or their computer, I don't know if it has any passwords on it.
Now, this is going to be a monumental mess.
Go into the email accounts and put a search for will or trust. Doesn't sound like anybody had any sort of communication.
It also doesn't sound like they sat with her at any point and said, look, your mom's gone now.
Right.
And here's here's blah, blah, blah. They didn't do that.
Now, it doesn't sound like that.
But Sheila, was the dad, was he sick when she died 10 months earlier? Was he, so he, did he know he might die too? Was he that sick?
you know, for the protection of privacy, I don't want to give too much information.
Okay, well, we have no idea who they are. We don't know their name. Yeah. The reason I ask that is this. If he was sick and he knew he had cancer or whatever, and I don't mean this in a bad way when I say shame on him for not thinking about her, the daughter, at 30. Because now, because he didn't sit with her and go, look, if something happens to me, knowing he's that sick, she's left with this overwhelming, mess.
And an even bigger mess. Let's say they bank it, you know, ABC Bank. Let's say they banked it at First Community. And there's a safety deposit box. Now, they can't even get into the safety deposit box if that's where all the documents are, unless he left instructions that she or someone else has authority to go in there. So now you've got that mess, too, where there might be documents.
How about an appointment book of any sort, a calendar, where there might be on there, meet with attorney, boom. That's another thing to look at, especially after she died.
It was a wake-up call for me.
This becomes a paperwork dump. Excavation job. Find wherever dad or mom kept all of their papers. Maybe it's a box. Maybe it's a lateral file. Have her go through those things and come up with some clues.
How long ago did the dad pass away?
Sunday.
Okay. Sunday. Here's the good news, I think. It was only 10 months after mom died that dad died. Somewhere from the time she died to a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months later, if there was any sort of will or whatever, somewhere there's going to be a check, there's going to be an appointment in a calendar with a lawyer or something after she died. And that's I would start looking there, because that would put her in touch with whoever that was that he contacted about her death. That would be the same person probably who took care of his will if there was one.
And here's a couple of definite ones. One is, Did dad have a prepaid funeral arrangement with the funeral home? Maybe the funeral home, because they're going to get paid, has some information about what the lawyer is, or dad have contact with that person. The other is on the stuff that's titled, the house in particular, you can go to the recorder of deeds in that county and find out how that real estate was titled, the Department of Revenue on the way that those vehicles were titled.
I have a question.
They may have those designations.
Sheila has made me think of something that I don't understand why it doesn't exist. Why isn't there a central place, call it a vault, call it whatever, where anybody can go? Because now every will that's made out, every trust, The children, let's say both parents get killed, know that they can go there and with proper identification and proper authority have somebody tell them, yes, here's the will, here's the attorney that did it. But there's no such place.
There's a business model.
There's no such place. I think that's a great idea.
Exactly.
And it ought to exist.
I think I see your point, and I think it is great. But unfortunately, this world is so full of fraud. It's like, what would protect you, you know, the innocent people, against somebody from obtaining?
Oh, I think that's a good point. That's a good point. You'd have to put in place very, very strict, specific instructions as to, before you can access this, you have to prove to us without any doubt you are these people's kid. And not everybody could do that.
It's probably the same argument when they started to come up with safe deposit boxes,
right,
or bank accounts or something like that, when you have to put in place security systems.
The big lesson here for anybody who's listening, who's a parent, I don't care if you're 40 or 80, tell your kids where these things are. And in my case at home, my kids know there is a typed page. On that page, the names of my attorneys, the names of my financial advice people, the name of my accountant, the name of the people that do my taxes every year, all those numbers and names are on a sheet, and that sheet is hidden in our house where nobody would ever find it. But if we die together, the kids know to go there, and these are the people you contact. And everybody, think about your kids, and think about the nightmare they're being left with, as this woman is, and help them avoid that.
And is she an only child? Sheila?
No, she does. Right. She does have siblings.
The second half of your question is, what happens if you can't find any of these or can't locate any of this information? And that is the intestacy statute of the state that they passed away in. And that means that the court, the probate court, would then, based on the relationship of the survivors to the decedents, the people that died, they get, based on certain percentages, and sometimes that's unbelievably unfair in a variety of ways, and it's always, always too expensive.
And it's avoidable. So, Sheila, if nothing else, what you've done today, and there are lots of people who listen to this segment, I guarantee you, tonight at dinner, it's going to come up in several households. Kids, we need to talk, and we need to tell you these things in case something happens to us. So you've done that.
I hope this is a reality check
it
for
is.
A lot of people.
It
because
is.
It sneaks up on you, and boom.
Well, good luck to her, and thank you for calling on her behalf. What is your relationship?
Thank you,
can
guys.
I ask your relationship to her? Is just a friend, a relative?
It is my daughter's good friend.
Okay. Well, good for you.
You know, as a parent, I feel for her. She's an orphan at 30.
Yeah. And did her parents have significant money or...
I don't know. I didn't know them that well.
Okay.
I just knew her.
Well, whatever
and,
it
you know,
is.
It's heart-wrenching
whatever,
the whole
whatever, whatever it is. If it's 10,000 or 10 million, I mean, they need to be able to close this and move on and then whatever they can
I think
get.
The most powerful thing is that if they had designations, if they wanted things to go a certain way, and because the information can't be located, the documents can't be located, what a shame for them to have passed away and for their last wishes, the way that they wanted their estate to be distributed, doesn't get fulfilled simply because there wasn't a communication line between the people and the loved ones they wanted to have
right.
that stuff.
Sheila, thank you, and good luck to your friends,
okay.
to your daughter's friend, okay?
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, bye-bye. I just got another great idea. I have great ideas, I don't know what to do with them. What about this? What about a place where attorneys could go? And it's a list of all the people looking for any attorney who might have done a will for their parents. And let's say attorney Al Schwartz sees that list and goes, oh, my goodness, I did the will for this guy's parents. And he contacts the person and goes, yes, they had a will. Shouldn't there be something like that?
I think the bar should have in their website a communication link for people that, you know,
don't know
who the
turn.
Lawyer
right.
did important documents is and throw it out there. Maybe there's a paralegal or some assistant or
here, my
another associate.
My parents' names were Jim and Dorothy, whatever.
And they lived in this town.
In this address. Is there an attorney out there who might have done a will for them? Boom.
And they'd put it on the Missouri yeah. or the Illinois, you know,
I think
ARDC website,
I think,
and there it is.
I think it would be a great idea. Tom, thank you for your patience. Thank you for waiting. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Is that me?
That's you, Tom.
Oh, okay. Hi, Doc Sherman.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah. I got a problem with somebody that did some work for me. He did the plumbing work. He took put a new pipe in from the outside of the street into the inside of the house. And in doing so, he broke up the concrete, the sidewalk. So... I talked to him about it, and he said, oh, well, he would do it as a favor. He would fix it. And he left great big piles of mud laying around, too, that he has never gotten back to getting rid of. And basically, what I believe, and I don't know whether this is true or like to find out, is it when a contractor does a job for you that it's implied into the contract that he's supposed to leave the property in the same condition that it was in the beginning? Isn't that part of the implied part of a contract?
My favorite question. The right after the tree questions, the contractor screwed up my project question. Oh, boy, are we sort of kins of spirit.
My
here.
First question, the sidewalk. Is this the sidewalk leading up to your house, or is this the city's sidewalk?
It's the city sidewalk out in front of the house.
Okay.
To answer your question, implied in the contract is that the work is to be done in a workmanlike manner at the same standard as other like-situated contractors. So do they have to put it back exactly the way it was before? Probably not. But they can't make it look like the world's biggest
mess.
Gopher that did a giant gopher hole in your middle of your lawn there, like Caddyshack or something. So, have you had another person come out? I know it looks like crap. It probably is horrible. Take pictures of it, first of all. Second of all, have you had somebody else who does similar work come out and give you an estimate as to what it would be to fix that?
To fix the concrete?
To put it back. That's right. To put that back.
No, I haven't. Okay. Well, what happened was, like, he said, well, as a favor to me.
The favor. The favor is that you wouldn't sue him.
That's like somebody saying, as a favor to you, I'll do the job the way I'm supposed to do it. That's not a favor.
Well, as a favor to you, I'll do it the way the contract says. Or I'll do, right. I'll charge you what I agreed to. That's not a favor. It's not a favor.
But what he did was he didn't get a permit from the city.
Well, you got him.
But he come out and he dumped the concrete in the hole. He dug a hole and then put the concrete in there. But that, the part of that that he put in is 2 inches below the level of the original sidewalk.
Wow.
Creates a hazard.
The sidewalk,
as far as I'm concerned,
he's got two big problems here. And the biggest one of all is that you are not pleased with his work. The second problem is he screwed with the city's sidewalk.
Without a permit.
I would have the city come out and say, here's the guy that did it. I never authorized him to do anything like that. Let the city go after him. And then I'd have somebody come back and do an estimate as to what it is to fix your property. And put that back in shape.
And believe me, the city will go after him for their sidewalk.
Now, I know what Tom's probably thinking. What happens if the city says, hey, all this work was done without a permit. You got to start over again. And Tom might have given this guy several $1,000s. What's going to happen to Tom? Are they going to make Tom rip everything out and start over? Maybe. But guess what's going to happen when your neighbors see this sidewalk or somebody trips on it? They're going to go, well, Tom's guy was out here monkeying around with that stuff, and they're going to sue you. So the fact that he didn't pull permits may not be something you knew about until the end.
I'm assuming he didn't. He couldn't have got a permit to do the work that he did because the city is really pretty persnickety about the sidewalks. You know,
I'm talking about the plumbing work. Because if you've got
plumbing work is all right.
Okay, good. That's something I was concerned about for you. I'd go talk to the city and I'd bring them out there and go, I didn't do this. I didn't authorize
this. Take the pictures with you when you go to the city, to the office.
And say, but I know who did. And we don't want our neighborhood. We don't want the kids tripping and falling or people breaking their ankles.
So I should contact the city.
I would absolutely contact
the
city.
The first thing they'll do is go back to see if he pulled a permit to do this work, and if he didn't, ooh, they already don't like him.
Yep, my concern, because, you know, I am also, you know, a homeowner that contracts with people, I worry when these people say that they've got pulled the permits, especially for plumbing, electrical work, and stuff like that, had not done it.
Yeah.
Now, maybe he did, and maybe he didn't. But if he didn't show you those permits, well, they can tell by looking at there's codes on the PVC about whether or not they cleared that and that was approved. But
it was from the outside, you know, from the top box on into the inside to the inside of the house.
Okay, that's better than a giant PVC deal. I think you call the city and you show them the thing, but tonight take pictures before somebody,
pictures of it from the very beginning.
Right, the bottom line here is take them to City Hall. That's where it starts, okay?
Take it to City Hall and talk to the guy that's in charge of the sidewalks.
That's right. Throw them under every bus you can find as a favor to him.
Yeah. All right?
Yeah.
All right, Tom. Thank you. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Good luck.
All right. Okay. But what I originally brought up that it, under a contract that the
oh, is it implied?
It specified
always implied in a contract is that the work will be done
to return the property to its original position. Is that a correct assumption on my part?
I think.
Well, we haven't seen the contract.
Well, he's asked about if it's implied. It's implied that it has to be pretty close. I mean, they can't just leave an open trench, but
I didn't say nothing about the lawn, about the grass, or anything like that. You know that I'm not being.
I say it's very squishy.
Tom, we got to run, but the contract's the least of your problems. The guy did obviously something wrong here. Yeah. So just go to City Hall, take the pictures, and start.
And if it looks terrible, get somebody to come out and give you an estimate of what the damage is on your property.
Okay.
All right. Then what?
No, Tom.
Call us back.
Call us back. Okay. You got Scott's email address?
Pardon?
Do you have Scott's email address?
No. Part of it, but not all of it.
Do you have a pen?
Law Office of Scott Sherman. That's it.
At gmail.com.
Okay.
Say that again.
Gmail at gmail.com.
Oh, Gmail.
There you go.
Okay.
Gmail.com. Okay.
Okay, Tom. Thank you. Good luck. All right. No. Whew. Okay. Now, Will, I don't know that I would have the patience that you've had, but you're up now. Welcome to 590 The Fan, and say hello to Scott Sherman.
How you doing, Scott Sherman? AM and the PM.
Thank you, Will.
Hi, Will.
Scott, you and I have talked before about a couple years ago about a property over on Priggy, 1048, where the homeowner wouldn't do anything about the trees. He'd keep dropping large limbs, even when the kids are out there. These trees are in bad shape. But now those tenants were the neighbors from hell. They're gone. But now this group that's got it went in, remodeled it, and did a bunch of work because the people that lived there before trashed it. They've cut the grass maybe three times the whole year. There's limbs all over the yard. I keep my yard looking like a park. And when they do send somebody over, they cut everything and blow it in my yard, and I spend an extra 2 hours cleaning up my yard. I confronted them. It's Section 8. The lady laughs about it. Well, we fired the guy. I go, lady, that was in May. You haven't cut the grass three times the whole summer. The guy they send over here, he's riding his Troy Bilt, and he's drinking a beer, and he's mowing the lawn, and he's throwing it every which way. Unbelievable.
Do you have a high-powered rifle? with a scope? I'm kidding. Hey, is this a subdivision? Is there some kind of HOA?
Spanish Lake, Larimore and Priggy. The other, hell. All the houses are turning into Section 8s, and they don't cut the grass. They don't do anything.
But there's nobody. But there's nobody to make them. Correct. I mean,
Well, I called the inspector, Frank. I talked to him today. He goes, well, it's going to take 7 days or so to activate the complaints. And I go, what about the sidewalk over here where the kids got to walk through? When the weeds at the corner, there's a big cul-de-sac or sewer there, and when it rains. You can canoe from my house down to the station,
We're short of time. I'm going to turn this over to Scott, but I'm going to say the bad news here is if you're not part of a subdivision or where there's an HOA or anything, there are certain places where people can just let their property go to hell, and there's nothing anybody can do. Scott?
There's no way anyone can cut around that sidewalk, and there's a bus stop there, and I'm talking about if you were in the woods, I'm talking about this stuff is 4 or 5 feet tall.
Okay, Scott, take it.
Well, these are the tenants, not the owners of the Section 8, right?
Well, it's also the city. I'm
trying to do a workaround so that the owner of the property will get in trouble with HUD so that maybe HUD will come over, and instead of the city, which is probably corrupt and incompetent.
Well, I talked to the manager who's in our property management for the HUD or Section 8.
Yep.
You go online, you can't get to who. Who's who? You look it up, and you get Zillow. You get all sorts of different stories of who owns the property. It's like they're incognito.
Well, you also might have a private action against the owner for a nuisance. It's so bad that you can't enjoy your property. It's continuous. They won't do it. You've asked them. You've been reasonable about it. So I'll get you a real estate lawyer. Talk to that person and see if they can file a lawsuit or an injunction against these people. And maybe you could really jam up the owner so that it costs so much money for screwing up the enjoyment of your property that they fix their property. The other was not even a joke, was Elliot Davis. I'm not kidding. Sent him over to Spanish Lake. the worst place you could possibly find that used to be really nice and say, is this what you allow to happen? Look at this place. It's terrible.
Yeah, let him walk. Let him walk in
and see if they'll get their inspectors to fix this thing. Because, I mean, if they've had any publicity at all in the last 5 years, it's all been bad. And I'm not being flippant about that. But as far as legally, I think real estate lawyer consult, is this a something where you could get your attorney's fees out of? Has this risen to that of a nuisance? And to me, it is.
My point is, we got a lot of crime around here. Some of these areas that are growed up, and when you make a point about it, it's growed up, and that's for people who've been jacked with their cars, teenagers stole their cell phones, going to work, trying to catch the bus, somebody robs them of what money they had in their cell phone. Now, if this stuff wouldn't stop, these criminals wouldn't have a place to hide, and if they turned the damn porch light on once in a while, you could see what was going on.
You'd be a great on-air, even hidden camera voiced person on Elliot Davis's Next. You paid for it. And I can get you a real estate lawyer about the nuisance.
I will. We're running short on time here, but here's my question to you. Has anybody been slapped with any sort of a legal letterhead notice? I'm guessing not, which is the reason the first step is contact a real estate attorney and let an attorney maybe frighten somebody into doing something.
Well, Frank, we're trying to fix our place up. We're on fixed incomes, and we've gotten health issues, and I've been in and out of the hospital recovering from a gunshot.
Okay.
And they pick up my place. They don't have no problem coming over here and tell me when, where, and what to do when they don't know what's going on, yet they let these slumlords and these other properties just do what they want.
Who picks on you?
Spanish Lakes Housing Department. They're code enforcement.
Yeah, something doesn't add up here. You need an attorney to go to bat.
Send me an email. I'll get you a real estate person. And I think this is I'm not being a wise guy. I think that's a great, perfect segment for Elliot Davis. You paid for it. Spanish Lake won't clean up its own mess, and it targets people that won't shoot them when they come to tell them that the house is a mess. It's essentially right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Will, do you have Scott's email address?
Yes, I do.
Let's hear it.
Scott's law office, no. Scott Sherman, yeah. email.com.
Do it again.
Law office, Scott Sherman, @gmail.com.
I didn't hear of. Did you say of? Law office of Scott Sherman. Okay, Will, good luck. This is a mess, and good luck, but I really do. Email him. He'll get you started on the right track, I think. He's helped a lot of people. He'll try to help you, okay?
Oh, I know. Scott's a great guy. I know.
Well, he's not a great guy, but he'll help you. Well,
he's a good guy. I'm all right. Great.
You're good. Not great. Let's not go crazy. Right. Will, thank you. Good luck to you.
All right.
Okay?
Thank you, and I appreciate my... Oh, thank you.
Okay, now, unfortunately, we can't help anybody in a minute and a half. That's not going to happen. So, Mike, who held for 15 minutes, my apologies. Maybe, you know what? We never know. Put Mike on here. We do have a minute and a half. Mike, I doubt we can do everything we need to do. Say hi to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Mike.
I am in the PM.
All right, go.
Real quick, I sent the CB radio. I'm a CB radio collector. I sent a radio off to repair to a guy in Springfield back in December. I sent him a payment for repair in January. He's had my radio ever since. I sent him an email in May. He sent me back a nasty response. Long story short, this guy will not respond to emails, to phone calls, to text messages, nothing. I put a thing on Facebook last night, and this is not coming for this guy. I've talked to the police department. I've talked to the prosecuting attorney. I've been told it's a civil matter. Well, my question is, if I go to this guy's house, if I take a four-hour ride to Springfield, knock on this guy's front door, can I have a Springfield cop with me to get my property back?
Yes.
Or is this ever considered theft since he had it for seven months?
Self-help for conversion, which is what this is, as long as there's no breach of the peace, is okay. So as long as you have law enforcement with you, and there's no breach of the peace, you don't go over there with a baseball bat, you absolutely have the right to go back and demand your property back.
And I think, Mike, you already are smarter than most people. Taking an officer with you is a brilliant thing to do.
Call ahead and let them know you can meet them at the station.
And do you own a high-powered rifle with a scope?
Oh,
just kidding.
Great.
No. Just kidding. I'm kidding. Okay, Mike, good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. I'm glad. You know what? In a minute and a half, we were able to help
him. We prevented a murder.
All right, rope jumper. When you jump again, we want a video.
I'm jumping tonight. I'm getting my reps
Facebook
up.
Show video, and thank you for what you do for people. We'll do it again next Thursday. Okay?
My pleasure.
Scott Sherman, everybody.
Thank you, Frank.
Come on, give it up.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're all smarter for this segment. We learned a lot. We're practically attorneys now. Okay, get ready. Change Gears. Playhouse coming up after the news. It's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is TJ Moe. You're listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS, Wood River, and 590thefan.com, St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. The risk of dangerous storm surge and hurricane-force winds is increasing as Dorian gets closer to Florida's east coast. The National Hurricane Center is now projecting the storm to reach Category 4 status when it arrives Monday morning. Miami Beach Public Works Director Roy Cooley says flooding will be a major problem.
We're installing portable, high-volume water pumps all around the city in our low-lying areas, so when we receive any type of surge or heavy rainfall,